Yo, yo, yo. Welcome in, golf fans. This is another edition of the Preferred Lines podcast. My name is Joe Idoni at Tour Picks. Of course, is the place to find me on Twitter. And we are here for the next 45 to 60 minutes to cover everything in the world of professional golf, including the Valero Texas Open. I'm thrilled that you're here to join me. Let's hit the show.
Full nine iron for him. They're going to go nuts when he hits this thing.
Amazing. Yesterday's price is not today's price.
All right, gang, let's do this. New time slot, 6 p.m. Eastern this week. Happy that a few of you were able to make the adjustment like Fran here. Fran, it's great to have you in the show. This is the Preferred Lines program. We are going to talk and recap everything that's happened once again in the world of professional golf. We're going to do a quick course preview for the Oaks course at TPC San Antonio. We're going to breeze through the odds boards, give some picks to win. We're in early. We'll get out early. Let's get after it. Of course, this show is proudly presented by the great folks over at Roto Baller. There's my boy. What up, Justin? Hideki week, Joe says. We'll see. I'll be on that shortly. But like I mentioned, the show proudly presented by the great folks over at Roto Baller. The promo code you need to use that would really help me out, Lines, L-I-N-E-S, a nod to the final word in this show's podcast. Still crushing the head-to-head markets over in the Discord. I put together 5 to 6 articles a week that are published over on RotoBaller, along with the other great members of the Avengers team over there. That's the promo code to use. Thank you again to RotoBaller for supporting the show. And got to mention, like, blown away, guys, by the amount of people that supported. And this just came in. I don't even make these. I don't even stock them myself anymore. But the Preferred Lines t-shirts are in. The back is sick. Like, I don't know if you see this. Comfort colors, heavy cotton tees. They are legit quality. The printing on them is fantastic. They ship in like 2 days after you place an order. I believe if you get in there today, the link I have in the description of this podcast, you can go over there, get it, and have it shipped in time for Masters Week. I appreciate all of you doing so. Now, let's talk some golf. I've got a special guest that I'm proud to bring to the show this week. You'll catch him almost every week on the PGA Tour live coverage. He's got his own podcast, Eyes on Golf. Welcome into Preferred Lines. Everyone give a warm welcome to a good friend of the program now, Jeff Eisenband. How are you, sir? You ready to talk some golf?
I'm fantastic. And as you bring it all up, I want to say thank you to everyone that's tuning in, because I'm the reason that you started early. I'm the one that screwed everything up. I'm the one that made people change their lives, whether it's you, the fans out there. So thank you to everyone that's accommodating me right now.
Dude, we are happy to have you on, and the people here are thrilled to hear what you have to say. My man Joe here, I'm happy to hear that you got the show, Joe. I got mine this weekend, fired up by how it came out. Anyone else who wants one, go over to preferredlinesgolf.com and get that. Jeff, let's start here. I want to talk about your experience in terms of broadcasting, because you've done just about it all, my man. You've done basketball, you've done esports, now you're in the PGA Tour Live Golf. Talk about your evolution in sort of your experience and growth in the broadcasting space and commentating on professional golf.
Yeah, it was a little weird at first. A lot of the people that followed me in the esports world were like, I don't get it. You were doing virtual basketball, now you're doing golf. Like, what's going on there? But you know, it's a long story. The short version of it is, like you said, I started at a website called thepostgame.com, which was a Yahoo Sports site, was doing a ton of digital work, kind of like what we're doing right here. Golf had definitely emerged as one of my specialties. At the same time, I was doing broadcasting for the NBA 2K League. I did everything with them, from on-desk hosting, kind of being the Ernie Johnson of the halftime and post-game show for the NBA's virtual basketball league, did some sideline reporting, play-by-play, color, deep Tom Rinaldi-level interviews. We did it all, and it was a lot of fun. But really, you know, I had a drive to get into what we would call in that industry IRL sports, in real-life sports. And golf was something that, as I turned into a freelancer, I was banging on the door, I actually hosted a golf betting show once a week for about 12 weeks on MSG Networks. And that was the reel that I ended up sending to the PGA Tour. I was like, hey, you know, this is, I'm talking about this, but I want to do play by play. And it happened to be a great time because PGA Tour Live, as I'm sure many of the people watching know, went from the NBC Sports Gold era of one stream a week to ESPN Plus, four streams a week, which means, you know, you need basically almost six times the talent every week. So it was a great opportunity for me to step in and be a part of the ESPN Plus team.
Yeah. And you talk about like IRL sports, right? And I would imagine that golf is probably one of the most challenging ones to do as someone who knows nothing, but I can sit here and imagine that you're calling a football game, you're in a press box, you're watching that game happen in real time in front of your own eyes, and you're able to sort of do play by play. The same thing with NBA, you're sitting there, you're watching the game. Golf, you have to be in a studio. Action is happening all across the course in different parts simultaneously. And it's really up to the person on the mic to tell that story and bring these different parts and chapters all together for the viewing audience. Talk about the challenges that are presented with just golf versus most other sports, how difficult that may be.
Yeah, it's a lot. And I do want to mention also, I've done esports for golf. I've actually done for the USGA and for the DP World Tour. I've done esports. I went to Dubai 2 years ago for esports for golf. Yeah, so I have some experience there as well. But you talk about golf, and you're right. I mean, what other sport do we have where the broadcasters can't actually see what's physically happening all at once at the same time? You know, it's not like an NBA broadcaster trying to call things happening on multiple courts at once, but that's what we're essentially doing with golf. So, you know, it's a tough sort of experience. I think it's one of those things when you don't do it, when you're watching on TV, you're like, how, when you really think about it, how does all of this come together? How are they seeing everything? How's it all going? What you do realize, especially on the weekend, right, is it's a little bit more concentrated on who you're actually talking about. And even during Thursday and Friday, you're really focused on some of those bigger names. And if guys start to emerge, we start to follow them. But you're right. You are updating a lot of people on what's happening. I'm glad I do this in the ShotLink era. I can't imagine what it was like, right, calling golf in the 80s or 90s. Someone emerges and you have no idea how they got to that point, almost like being at a golf tournament. So there are some incredible challenges that come with it, but also for PGA Tour Live, you know, we're lucky that a lot of our streams, lucky from a actual professional standpoint, a lot of the streams are featured groups, marquee groups. So you really get to dig your heels into 3, 6, 12 guys, whatever it may be. And I think also the experience of sitting there for multiple hours, multiple days, doing this multiple weeks, you develop context that you're able to share with the viewer that you're not sitting on the couch necessarily watching the same guys for 4 hours at a time. But when you're broadcasting it and you're doing it, you get to see things that the fans may not have seen everything, and you get the opportunity to update the fans on that.
Is the majority of the work, out of curiosity, done on site from like a production truck, or are you in like sort of the home base at Ponte Vedra Beach and getting like a feed that's maybe say 15, 20 seconds ahead of where we're seeing it so that you're able to sort of prepare for the next call?
Yeah, I think this is all public. So I'm you know, outing the production, but I think people, so PGA Tour Entertainment is where we originate everything for PGA Tour Live out of, which is our team that's actually in St. Augustine, right near the World Golf Hall of Fame. Don't stalk us. Where the World Golf Hall of Fame used to be. It's moving. There were some great articles in the last couple of weeks printed about we are moving to a big, PGA Tour Entertainment is moving to a big brand new building in Ponte Vedra Beach, right across the moat to the Global HQ. But it's not ready yet. So that's the plan, is to move there in the future. So we're in four different streams in four different studios, broadcasting there with a level of the broadcast team. Producers and directors are there with us. And then we've got a whole other production team that's on the ground at every event that is working out of those new trucks that have been written about as well this year, that they are running all the cameras. We do have an on-course walker for three of the four streams that are down there. You know, all of the stuff that can't be done anywhere else, all the boom mics that are held that were getting those caddy conversations. That's all going on at the actual events. So for me, I'm in New York right now. When I travel, when I do events, I go down to St. Augustine, and that's where I spend, you know, 4 to 6 days in the trenches. Yeah. And that's where I'll be in Ponte Vedra Beach next year. Would I love some more experiences one day on the ground? 100%. You know, I'd love to smell the grass and see things for my own eyes, but this has been an incredible opportunity and something that, you know, we can get into, but something that we didn't used to have, right? For broadcasting golf and for the fans, I hope they understand how great and how beautiful this operation is, that you are able to wake up on Thursday morning right now, right? Valero Texas Open will probably start what, 8:30 a.m. Eastern time. You can wake up and now you can watch a main feed, an all-inclusive feed of golf from the moment the first shot is hit on Thursday morning to the moment the last putt drops on Sunday.
Yeah, it's come a long way. And I think the product on ESPN Plus is far better than the product was, you know, previously on PGA Tour Live when it was on the Golf Channel Network. You get so much more access to shots. But you're active on golf Twitter, Jeff. I'm sure you hear the noise, yeah, and the people complaining and the discourse. We need more golf shots. We need less commercials. We don't want to hear the 10-minute monologue story about a player. We just want to see golf, mm-hmm, right? That's what everyone's, and even the players have kind of come out and said this. Homa, yeah, Morikawa, I've heard recently. Patrick Cantlay as well said there needs to be changes sort of the, you know, in terms of how the game is covered from an entertainment aspect. Everyone hears it. You guys hear it as well. What sort of changes do you envision over maybe, say, the next 1 to 2 years that could, mm-hmm, fill that void that fans may be looking for?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm not the one necessarily making the budgetary and production decisions, yeah, but I think you've heard a lot of, you know, overall, it's been moving in the right direction. I think people can say that. And I think that golf, like all sports, is going through a time where everyone's trying to figure out, you know, everything used to be so simple, right? Put the sport on, take a commercial break, put the sport on, take a commercial break. And it's not like that anymore. You know, I heard some things like having a sounds of the game for golf would be awesome. And that's something that I think can be reached with the players, where it's like, hey, we're miking you all up, or we're putting the microphones close to you. Not everything will be live, but we're going to take the best stuff and kind of pop in every hour with, this is the best stuff over the last hour, or whatever it may be. Because I think fans want that a lot more. And I think they want that in all sports, right? Think about the NFL films content that we get every Monday or Tuesday that everyone loves to hear. You know, I think golf fans want a lot more of that because, I think fans, we show a lot more golf shots. And I think then sometimes fans go, well, I don't need to see that guy's shot. You know, and it's, mm-hmm, by the time we get to Sunday, fans, you know, there really becomes, let's focus on the five guys who are right in it. You know, let's build the drama. I want to see the player's reaction to this shot more than going to a guy who's 7 off the lead on a different part of the golf course. I think that, you know, it's finding out what is really going to hit that pulse. I understand what you're saying, that sometimes in the heat of the moment, we don't want to toss to a 5-minute feature when everyone's locked in and just wants to see the golf shots. But I think there are also some tournaments, and I watch golf with my fiance. I watch golf with friends, majors who aren't maybe as into things, and they love learning about guys that they may not have known about, you know, during the weekend and of majors. And I think that some of those times, those things are important. So it's a matter of balance, like everything in life. And it's a matter of how can we keep, not lose that flow. Right. Yeah. Not lose that. So, and I'm not saying picture in picture while we're running a feature, but I'm saying understanding, like, hey, we got to get to this person's shot, because the fans, like, if you are a fan and you're sitting here, and I think the best producers are sitting there going, if I'm a fan right now, I want to see what Patrick Cantlay's reaction is going to be when he comes up and sees this lie right now. So let's make sure we get to that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I find it fascinating too, but I totally understand what you're saying, how there are different audiences, and some of that 5-minute long narrative storyline stuff appeals to certain people. I think that I would love to see sort of an evolution of, like, I don't want to call it like a gambling or a betting feed, mm-hmm. but something that's more specifically catered to that audience that just wants strictly yep. stripped away golf shots. Like, we want the cut line covered. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't necessarily, for when I watch it, like, I would get frustrated when, for TPC Scottsdale, for instance, when they, on Friday, when they basically exclusively on the coverage just showed the 16th hole and we're covering everyone that came through, and because that's what a lot of people want to see, but we're missing like the entire yeah. cut line and that drama that is filled there. Viewership numbers have sort of been down throughout this entire year. What do you, and it's not coverage related, but what do you sort of attribute that to? I wonder if the idea is that we need this singular dominant player that Scotty is kind of evolving into. Is that best for the growth of viewership numbers? Is it good to have a Titan alongside Scotty that can duel with him week in and week out and have these two pillars of the sport? Or is it better like we had last Sunday where you have seven or eight sort of Davids right there trying to slay this Goliath, and which one of these guys can get it done? Is there one of those molds that you think is best suited for the majority of the audience when you look at viewership as a whole?
Well, you may have heard there are some players who aren't on the PGA Tour who might be of PGA Tour quality.
They're decent. Yeah.
So that could have a direct effect on ratings and may have been something that those of us who know the sport have been talking about for probably 12 to 18 months now about, hey, let's, you know, right. I mean, I think it's no secret that, a split golf world created some catchy headlines and a lot of conversation among people who weren't golf fans at first, but we knew long term, you know, to eventually you need people to know where they are tuning in and getting the best golf, and that'll happen down the line. But I think to your point, you know, I think building up personalities, players, not even personalities as much as player profiles, I think is very important. I think what you're seeing with Scotty right now, because the knock that people have had on Scotty over the last 2 years is he's not that interesting, or oh, he doesn't have enough personality. Scotty Scheffler has not changed who he is over the last now 4 years on the PGA Tour, whatever it is, but 4 or 5 years. But now, because he's won so much, because he's breaking records, because he has maintained this dominance for 3 years, you are seeing an interest and a respect and a lore that is totally cut out of the fact that he is the best golfer on the planet. Yeah. And I think that winning will always kind of cure everything in that sort of way. I think you're seeing a little bit of Wyndham Clark in that right now, that last year it was, oh, this guy kind of came out, he's peaking at the right time. And now you look at his body of work and you're going, okay, this guy's a baller. This guy's going to be a regular. This guy's going to be a star. I want to watch this guy strike a golf ball. I want to see what he's going to do. I'm intrigued. I think the bottom line is, you know, bigger names are always going to drive ratings, always going to drive aspects of the sport. But I think that also it's not as simple as that. I think that it's, you know, like what you said about the Texas Children's Houston Open, excuse me, you know, being a deep roster of guys, I'm intrigued as a golf fan. I was locked in seeing, you know, looking at the leaderboard thinking anyone can win this. I don't know if someone who doesn't have the context is going to jump in as much. They'll see Scheffler. I mean, I was sitting with my fiance and she's like, okay, Scheffler, I know Akshay, like who's the skins guy? You know, there's a lot of that. But then like, I don't think, and this is not a knock on him, like Joel's awesome, but I don't think Joel Damon competing every week and like being in the top 10 every week is going to like change the dynamic of golf fans. You know, I think that you need that sustained excellence from guys. I think that there's a lot of critiques right now because the Rorys, the Spieths, the Thomases aren't holding up their end of the bargain, but they got here because of their sustained excellence, not just because they were personalities, because they've been among the top players. And we know that their ceiling is higher than everyone else's out there on the planet.
Yeah. Look, you mentioned a few of them. We're 1 week away from, you know, major championship summer over the next 4 months taking place. a lot of those guys who are struggling right now are here this week. Rory McIlroy, Jordan Spieth, Max Homa, Colin Morikawa. These are big names that we sort of propped up. You know, a year ago, Morikawa was the best ball striker in the world. Max Homa was a superstar in the making. Spieth still drives the ratings. Rory, of course, drives the ratings. These are huge names, and they all are struggling right now. Which one of those players would you say you're most concerned about headed into major championship season?
I think I have to say Spieth. And yet I would be less surprised if Spieth won a major than some of those other players. But I would also wouldn't be surprised if Spieth just didn't show up in any of the majors. He'll show up at the Masters because he always does. I'm much more worried about the other majors. But, I mean, I watched a lot of him at Valspar calling that event, and he missed the cut by one, but there's just too many loose shots right now. And what I don't want to see from Jordan Spieth is kind of turning into, like we saw at the Century, he played really well this year, finished third. And there were some rumblings that of, you know, Spieth's a shot maker. This is a great course for him, but can he play in other places on the PGA Tour? And he kind of hasn't proven that this year. You know, he'll probably show up this week. He'll show up at Augusta. He'll show up at the RBC Heritage in a couple weeks. This is a great spot on the calendar. So, you know, people can bookmark this and say when he plays well the next few weeks, look what you did. But I'm much more concerned about a Pinehurst or a Valhalla for Spieth. His game has been too erratic and too volatile. But you talked about Colin Morikawa. The exact opposite could be said of Morikawa in terms of also concern, but his high weeks have just not been there, really going back to that Open Championship a few years ago, you know, in 2021. And that's the biggest concern for, you know, it's a little bit of Xander Schauffele-itis, that consistency is great, but sometimes you got to hit the shots. And I just wouldn't, of those names that you mentioned, Colin would be the one that I would probably expect to win a major least right now, just because of that lack of really showing up and having peak weeks.
Yeah, one of the things, and you kind of touched on it a bit earlier in the show, and I think is fascinating to me anytime we get an insight or a glimpse on it as a viewer on television, is the player-caddy relationship. And what I've really noticed with Scotty and Ted Scott in particular is their attention to detail and communication on every shot that Scottie Scheffler takes. They talk back and forth, they figure out a plan, and then Ted will step away and it comes down to one of those sides executing. Vice versa, there are some players, you know, Rory doesn't talk to Harry really at all about any shots. He doesn't read a putt. He barely gives him a yardage, and he stepped out. I followed him very closely at the Players. I think Spieth and Greller is fascinating to hear them talk. I followed that group a lot at TPC Sawgrass, and just hearing them communicate. Do you think, what is the like level of importance of the caddy play and a player's results? And do you think it's something, like you mentioned, having more of that on the coverage? Do you think players are open to that? Are they worried that maybe they're going to get caught saying something that they could get a little bit of blowback for, or may put them in a bad light? Because I think it really gives fans on the outside like to know what they're trying to do, because that's the mystery of golf. When a player pulls up for three, we know he's trying to make it. Like when a player, you know, we understand the goal. Sometimes we don't understand the goal of all these shots, and it's not always to fire right at the pin. The goal may be, okay, we're looking 20 yards left here. I want to hit a soft cut over that bunker and land it 20 yards left the green. It's nice to know what they're attempting before the shot, and it puts some context into how good of players they are and adds a little bit to the broadcast. Do you think players are for the most part open to being mic'd up in those situations?
I think maybe half and half. I think that players, like you said, are more worried that they're going to say something that's going to look bad upon them. Then I think that they're going to let out this strategy. Golf, there's no defense in golf, right? So, you know, they can talk all they want, but if another player needs to actually execute in terms of what they're trying to do. So I think it's a lot of concern of like, hey, we want to have this free conversation. I don't want people to be on my case or, you know, me to shine in a bad light because of the way that me and my caddy curse or the way that me and my caddy just go back and forth, or how I'm complaining about something in the moment. I mean, like there are some players that complain about everything on the course, but are the nicest guys off the course. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a big part of it. You talk about the caddy player relationship. I think that there are a lot of, armchair fans who want to tell a player who their caddy should be. And I actually think Justin Thomas had this best, I think it was on No Laying Up a couple of years ago, where he talked about Tiger and Joe LaCava playing practice rounds to them. And he said, Joe LaCava could not be my caddy. Like JT kind of called himself delicate in that, like, Joe LaCava and Tiger are yelling at each other about club choices. And Tiger demands that in a caddy. You know, he had it in Steve Williams. He had it in Joe LaCava, that he needed sort of a guy who would be willing to stand up to him, challenge him, tell him a different opinion. And that didn't mean that Tiger was going to fire the guy. That's not to say JT doesn't want to hear differing opinions. He just doesn't want to, he doesn't want to be mad at his caddy during the round, right? So he had Jimmy Johnson. Jimbo, obviously has bones now. And they, it's more of a getting along and being educated on the golf course. Now, I don't know Rory and Harry's dynamic as deep as other people do. I don't think they're crazy open about it, but it's clear that Rory is going to do what Rory wants, and Harry's there to help, but Rory feels most comfortable on the golf course with someone who is not going to get different thoughts in his head. And I think that's perfectly fine if that's what you want to be. I think when Rory wins, a couple of years ago, when he won the FedEx Cup and he was playing much better and he almost won the Open, there wasn't as much critiquing of Harry. And I mean, I think Rory won the RBC Canadian Open that year with Harry actually on an off week. But then when he doesn't play well, it's all of a sudden, oh, the caddy. And I think the players who have things together will tell you it's never, the caddy's not the reason that they're not playing well. Sometimes it can help. Sometimes it can hurt. Paul Tesori, since he left Webb Simpson, right? He was with Webb Simpson for over a decade. And then he was with Cameron Young very briefly. I was with people who saw the two of them talking, as in Paul talking a lot. That's what Paul is known for. That's what Paul has been paid to do by Vijay Singh and Webb Simpson and others for years. And it's just not Cameron Young's personality. And a lot of people turned to me and said, this isn't going to work for long.
Yeah.
And then you see he's with Tom Kim right now, who I think should be great when Tom Kim is happy, because they both seem to talk. And I think that Tom Kim probably needs someone who's going to be talkative like that. You saw it with Joe Skovran last year, the last couple of years. So, it depends. It really is player to player.
Yeah. Briefly, just kind of talking overall players headed into the Masters next week, from the PGA Tour standpoint, I feel like a lot of the top end talent, we talked about it with McIlroy and Spieth, but even when you look at Hovland and these other guys who are near the top of the rankings, they're all definitively struggling. And it kind of feels like it's getting to be the point where it's like Scotty and the rest of the guys, and this gap between them is increasing. The spectrum is widening there. And I don't really know how the LIV guys fall into this. Where do you stand on your defending Masters champion, Jon Rahm? He hasn't been awesome on LIV in the four events that he's played yet. How do you accurately rank him coming into this? Do you still think he's probably number two to Scotty in terms of a favorite to win the Masters? Or where do you put these guys? If not Rahm, what LIV player do you think has the best chances of having success at Augusta National?
I think I tweeted out earlier today, Jon Rahm has played 12 competitive rounds to this point in the 2024 calendar year. He played 28 at this point last year. And that includes, I did the math, he withdrew from the Players after one round last year, and he only played three rounds, not even, I guess, full rounds in the WGC match play, because he didn't make the knockout round. But to play that much, and he'll get to 15 before the Masters, because he'll play three more this week. And we've only seen maybe six of them. And let's be honest, that's if we tuned in to what was going on. It's crazy to think that we haven't seen Jon Rahm play that much. And I think that you can't discount that in terms of the overall cadence of the player, because he has had, to this point, less than half the competitive rounds that he had in the 2024 calendar year at this point. Now, you could say, well, Brooks Koepka did great last year, and Brooks Koepka has been a guy who has been successful not playing as many competitive rounds. Even when he played on the PGA Tour, he wouldn't have played as much as John Rahm played to this point last year. Sure. But that's why I'd probably lean more Brooks Koepka than John Rahm at this point, because there's a guy who's done it, as opposed to Rahm, who we've heard vocally talk about how he misses out on that. He hasn't been playing. So you can play at Silverleaf all you want, but at some point you've got to play competitively. And so look, could John Rahm come show up, play like John Rahm did last year and blow everyone away? Sure. But I just can't feel as confident as I did last year, because the data just isn't there. And he's basically said himself, the data isn't there.
Yeah. And they're two very different personalities, I think, when it comes to preparation and practice. And what really, like, he reminds me, like, we used to have this term. I was a lacrosse player growing up. We used to call certain kids like the lax rats, right? Because they were just all in. Everywhere they go, they had a stick. They're always thinking about lacrosse. They want to practice. They want to play constantly. Rahm is a golf rat. Like, he needs the cheese, man. He needs to be out there playing. And I feel like the competitiveness he's missing week to week and not being able to competitively tee it up versus Brooks, who, let's be honest, like, even if he played 8 tournaments leading up to the Masters, how many of those was he truly invested in, all in on winning? Probably very few, a handful. He gears up for 4 weeks a year. That's what he wants to peak for. And I think it's going to be an interesting element to see Rahm's preparation. Before we kind of shift over to the Valero, I just wanted to ask you briefly. This is a betting podcast. You mentioned that you did it before for MSG. Mm-hmm. Like, the integration in terms of PGA Tour Live and coverage in general all around, they're sort of tiptoeing into this space where they're talking about DraftKings odds, and they all have official partners. And this segment brought to you by FanDuel and whatever it is. The new partnerships that are sort of developing as the legalization of sports betting continues to cover the United States. From a production standpoint, is it something that you're consciously making an effort or told, like, we want you to talk about the odds at this point, or we want you to touch on matchups? We're not told to talk about it and not told to touch on it. I know when I was, for just speaking from experience, when I was in the media center a few weeks ago, they kind of gave me the do's and don'ts from, do not ask players about gambling. Don't talk about it. You can talk about it on your own, but when you're in here, don't speak about it, which I found kind of, I understood, but I also kind of found it unusual. You know, you have 8 gambling partners that their logos are all over the place, yet when I'm in this room, I'm not really supposed to speak on it. How is that like in terms of coverage and trying to carefully integrate that in for that audience of people, especially that are tuning in at, like you mentioned, 7:30 in the morning on a Thursday? A lot of the people got action on it, let's be honest. So how do you sort of navigate that?
I'm gonna answer this question in two parts. Okay. I just want to address the players aspect of it first, because I've had people talk to me about, hey, I'm playing in this golf event, you know, this pro-am or something with this guy. I'm gonna say that I bet on him all the time or something like that. And my feeling is, and this is not just for golf. I think that if people who work in betting and bettors really want this to continue to be a part of the sport and be legal, I think we need to keep the players and teams out of it as much as possible, because I think once they start to be told that people are betting on them or asked about it, it does become a little dicey in terms of, like, the gray area becomes pretty black or white all of a sudden. Now, to your point about, from a broadcast standpoint, there's no one really telling me what I can and can't do. And obviously I can't get into the deep insides of production, but I'll tell you this, you know, MSG Networks, for example, I still do some content for them in sports betting for basketball and hockey. And one thing that I've realized in the industry, I'm 30 now, and I've probably, betting became legal in Jersey probably about 5 or 6 years ago now, kind of the other state other than Nevada. And there was definitely a push for younger talent to get involved, because a lot of the talent who's been working in sports media for decades still felt like it was very taboo. And I think for the next generation of people coming up, it's something that we are kind of being bred on, is a part of our life, is more normalized, is less taboo. So it's, you know, it's a way for us to break into the industry, and it's a way for us to take opportunities that those before us really don't feel comfortable with. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, it's such an obvious, important part of sports. Even before recently, spreads would be in ESPN, Gamecast, box scores, even though they weren't on the ticker on ESPN before, they were in the app. And I think that, you know, betting lines are adding to the context of, you know, who's most likely to win. Well, now we have actual lines that we can cite to talk about. I think that's incredibly additive to sports. I think there's a little bit, maybe too much of a heaviness in terms of like, look how much money I made betting. That maybe doesn't need to be a part of it. Or like, hey, I'm going to help you buy a house. Like, let's stop that there.
Yeah.
Because that's when there's a lot more issues that present themselves. I think we will land on a spot and, you know, in terms of like, take the PGA Tour, for example, you'll land on a spot where you'll see probably betting odds on stream and it will be mentioned who the odds on favorite is. But I think that while it will be on the screen, it won't necessarily be in your face, because also for as many people here who are watching, who are into this and want that to be the entire focal point, there's also a lot of people that love golf and want to watch in a different way that they don't want it shoved in their face. So there's got to be a happy medium.
Right. You answered that very well, and I respect it. Let's talk about a little bit about the Oaks course at TPC San Antonio. All right, gang, course preview portion of the show. The Oaks course, TPC San Antonio. First of all, this event, the Valero Texas Open, is actually the longest running professional golf tournament to be held in the same city for its entirety since 1922. So we're going on over 100 years that an event, it's gone through some different name changes, but in its fashion has been in existence. This course in particular started hosting this event in 2010. It is a Greg Norman design. It is a TPC course, so it's technically open to the public if you want to pony up and pay the steep TPC fees they got out there, but it sees 40,000 rounds of golf annually. The site also has the Canyons course, which is a Pete Dye design. Overall, I think one of the unique aspects when I look through the scorecard about this golf course that I think is a bit unusual or atypical in terms of the PGA Tour setup is the difficulty of the opening start. So the first and the fourth holes are the two hardest holes on the course. In fact, six of the first nine holes play over par. It is a very tough stretch, and you got to come out of the gates ready to roll at this course. But there is some reprieve. There are some birdies to be made absolutely down the stretch in round four of the 2023 Valero Texas Open. All five of the final five holes played under par. The easiest hole being the par 5 14th hole is just over 555 yards. Of course, the closing hole you'll all recognize was sort of the winding rock creek that moves upward toward the green as it sort of ventures its way uphill. In terms of stats that I have importance on this week, Jeff, that may not be as well talked about by some of the other shows you guys may be listening to, I'm really looking at sand save percentage. They redid the bunkers here a few years ago. There's 64 of them on property. It is since ranked the most difficult on tour in terms of sand save percentage. They are very steep. They are new. They are sort of have these deep faces that are difficult for yourself to get up and down at. So if you have a player that is proficient there, I think that it could be advantageous this week. Also, looking back through, you know, Corey Connors has won two of the last four editions of the Valero Texas Open. He mentioned that this course favors a right to left ball flight, or a guy that hits a draw off the tee for right-handed players. He said this, quote, "This course is a little different style-wise than we see, but for me, I like to hit the ball right to left. It's important at Augusta also, and I think it fits really well here. Being comfortable seeing that shot shape, I think, translates really well into Augusta. So this being the player's final tune-up, I think, is important." And lastly, I don't think a lot of people are going to look at distance and power as much this week because of the narrow fairways, but there is no penalty for the rough. It kind of has a little bit of desert golf aspect, but if you have a huge miss off the tee, you land in sort of those native areas and you can get Kevin Nod by chance if you get in those trees or bushes. But for the most part, the rough is not a problem. I think that power sort of unlocks the potential to go after all the par fives. The 17th hole is actually right around 340 yards. They usually will move the tee up one of those days, so that can become drivable as well. And I think that having prodigious power off the tee can be an advantage that may go a little bit underlooked here. The missed fairway penalty from the rough ranked the lowest on tour in 2023. It's not thick. It's not steep. As long as you don't have a huge wayward miss, you should be fine. They're actually the birdie percentage. I saw PGA Splits had this from the rough last year was actually higher than the birdie percentage from the fairway. So I think that that comes down to distance and guys being closer to the hole. Those are sort of my notes on this golf course. Jeff, do you have anything that you see or sort of to add there from what you've been looking at?
I think that's a great summary, first of all. I think that I like what you said, you know, about the bunkering, because there really is a lot of trouble on this course. The hardest thing for me to judge is the holes are not, I wouldn't say that this course is an example of 18 holes that are, you know, all they're some of them are distant siblings. They're not exactly, they're not like the siblings that you would recognize. You know, you need someone to tell they're brothers, even though they don't look the same. because, you know, some of these holes have tight fairways. Some of them don't. Some of them have trees. Some of them don't. There's a lot of, if you dropped Harbortown into Texas, aspects that I feel here with a little bit more length. And that's maybe why a Spieth has shown up at both locations before,
maybe.
Because there's a lot of trouble to get into and there's a lot of hard trouble to get out of. I like what you said about Corey Connors. I'd add that Charlie Hoffman has had a lot of success here, who also looks like he has hit a, like that he hits a draw on every shot. Yep. Even he doesn't, just the way that he, and of course the big joke is how success, you know, he's had the greatest first rounds at Augusta National probably in the last 15 years. There's a lot of connection there. I'm looking at guys who are ball strikers because, you know, Connor Spieth and JJ Spahn is the other guy who's won in the last four editions. I think that you need to be able to shape shots here. It's not just a total, you know, bombing gouge because of all the problems that do present themselves. But you do have to be able to hit the golf ball, and your putting is not going to be able to save you if you can't get to the greens here.
Love it. Let's look at some players and their odds this week. All right, Rory McIlroy will tee it up as the favorite this week, roughly 9 to 10 to 1, depending on where you shop that price. Ludvig Åberg, Texas Tech grad, makes his way back to Texas here, is 12 to 1. Hideki 20 to 1. Spieth 20. Max Homa 22. Connors 25. Fitz 25. Morikawa 28. And Brian Harman 30 to 1. Those are all the players sub 30 to 1 this week or at the top of the odds board. Jeff, any of those guys that you kind of got your eye on that you like this week, maybe more than others?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you some of the names jumping out to me. Okay. That I don't know if you just said, but Brian Harman at plus 3,500 is yelling at me right now. You know, we know how well he played at the Players. We just brought up some of the aspects of being able to shape the golf ball. You know, you talk about having to hit a draw here, and maybe that's the first thing that people's, you know, comes to people's mind. Brian Harman also is able to shape the golf ball. I don't think it matters that he's a lefty. Being able to cut the golf ball here, I think, is just as important. That's just those odds. We need to start treating Brian Harman, and I know he's only won 3 times on the PGA Tour, but we need to start treating Brian Harman with the same sort of respect that a lot of those other big names are getting. So to me, he's played here 6 times, hasn't played here since 2019, has 3 top 25s. I love his spot there at 3,500. You want me to give you a couple down the board that I have?
Well, let me touch on one guy that I like at the top of the board first, and then we'll sort of move our way down. But I honestly, I wrote up my power rankings this week. I love Ludvig. I think he's a great fit here. But the guy that I think like is the favorite in my eyes to actually win is Hideki. He's playing unbelievable golf right now. I'm going to pull up here. Let me see if I can grab. Yeah, I do have it up. His stat profile this week. So look at his stat profile from Hideki, his last 4 rounds played. The approach numbers are off the chains. The around the green numbers are outrageous. He was able to finish T6 at the Players despite losing 2 strokes putting. The guy has gained 34 strokes on the field in his last 4 starts. Put together one of the best final rounds we've ever seen in the history of Riviera Country Club. I think that he's gearing up. There were some injury concerns at the Players, although I talked to Keith Stewart about it last week. We didn't have any of those. You could sit there and watch him in a hunched over position on the practice green for 90 minutes prior to the Players' Championship and understand that this guy's not really dealing with too bad of an injury to stand on the practice green putting for an hour and a half before. I think that he's ready to go. I think that he's able to sort of manage some of these injuries that have come about with just frankly with his age and the amount of reps that he has on his body. But he's playing fantastic golf right now. I have less concerns about him than any other player on the board, and I think that 20-1 is a relatively fair price. I worry about Rory this week a little bit just because of what I saw off the tee at the Players. He's dealing with this left miss. I wonder, you know, the change up in schedule. He usually doesn't, he puts a ton of prep week. Last week, what did he, last year headed into the Masters, he said he played like some outrageous 150 practice holes leading up to Augusta and it went terribly for him. Yeah. Change in strategy this year. He played three times in Florida, which was unusual for him because he teed it up at the Cognizant. So three consecutive weeks. Now he comes to Valero, which he hasn't played in a while, the week before. So I think that it's all more or less an attempt to break everything down to the studs and retry a different method to attacking for that green jacket that he knows he wants. So I think Hideki's my favorite guy sort of at the top. As we kind of move down, you mentioned
but that I just Kai had one name at the top please. Just for people to look at. Matt Fitzpatrick at 20 plus 2,500. If we really believe everything that we've read, that he had weights in his driver and didn't know that he had weights in his driver and now all of a sudden is playing much better golf and just finished, what, fifth at the Players, T21 at Cognizant, there's reason to believe that Matt Fitzpatrick will return to that form that he was in closer to the U.S. Open 2 years ago. The guy won the RBC Heritage last year apparently with weights in his driver. So. Yeah. If he is more locked in, this is kind of the time in the schedule where he's played better in the past. I don't know if you're going to get those odds as he continues to improve as the year goes on.
Yeah, I like that. It's interesting. You know, it's funny that we're out here trying to prognosticate and handicap and bet on this sport. And the guy that is the most detail-oriented player on the entire PGA Tour can go a full calendar year with nearly a weight in his driver that they pulled it out and said he nearly had a heart attack when he saw what happened. So Fitzpatrick shapes up well. Morikawa, I have question marks for. I mean, you have Fleetwood, Noren, Horschel, all playing good golf there. Mm-hmm. English has made some positive strides. I tweeted out earlier, the only player in PGA Tour history to win four events in the state of Texas, albeit over 10 years ago, but that man's Adam Scott. Russell Henley, 45-1. There are a good portion of guys here in this sort of middle tier range. Jeff, are there any that you kind of have your eyes on this week?
I have two here. I mean, I have of that, not of that group, but of, I have Akshay at plus 5,500. Akshay Bhatia is right down there where, again, another guy we got to start respecting, or you have them there. It looks like, is that plus 6,500?
Yeah, 60. Yeah. There's 55 at DraftKings. I think the 60-1 is over at FanDuel. So you can price it around, but he's right in that range.
I mean, what does Akshay have to show us? We just told you that ball striking has been, I mean, Corey Connors won here two of the last four events. That's not exactly, that is a guy who's a pure ball striker and not exactly the most elite putter in the world. So Akshay is only going to get better. And not just that, I know he won last year. He almost won the Century this year. I feel like, especially for a guy who's a household name at this point, I'm shocked to see him down there. And then the guy even, by the way, Tom Kim also jumping out there. If he's healthy, that's way too low for him. I mean, Tom Kim should not be behind Bo Hossler or the same as Bo Hossler and a couple of those names. And then I'm seeing, at least I'm looking at DraftKings, I'm seeing Nikolai Højgaard all the way at plus 7,500. Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes you have to look at this stuff and go, what are people, is the public not watching the same golf that I'm watching? Is the public not watching the guy who finished as the runner up at Torrey Pines, who was so great in the Ryder Cup last year, to see him at those odds right now? I feel like if you're going to, you know, if you want to take a guy and, you know, play him multiple weeks until he wins, great time to start with Nikolai Højgaard.
Yeah, I love that. I have, here's a couple guys that I have. So I took Harris English. I got an early number this morning at 50-1. It looks like he can probably still get some 40s out there, but His last four starts, he's been playing really well. T17, 7th, 21st, T19 at the Players' Championship, and he had been dismal at TPC Sawgrass. He had never been able to play that course well, but he did finish top 20 this year. He's managed to gain strokes putting in 7 of the last 10. He's hitting 70% of greens in regulation. He's above tour average in distance. He's above tour average in driving accuracy. He's well above tour average in scrambling and sand save percentage. I think that he's sort of trending in the right direction. And I did take Tom Kim, Jeff. 60-1 withdrew at the Players. I believe he had a little flu bug, but it was a sickness. It wasn't an injury that caused him to withdraw. The ball striker that I believe him to be, that maybe isn't shown in some of the recent stats, but what my eyes told me from what I saw last year, my eyes told me from what I saw at the Players Champ, or at the President's Cup, this guy can step up and hit big golf shots when it matters. I hope, and he needs to return to sort of a little bit of that form to have a chance this week, but the number stuck out to me at 60-1. I'm betting the ceiling on Tom Kim. Won twice at the Shriners, one at the Wyndham. These are courses with relatively narrow, tight fairways. I think that, you know, he's struggled, really struggled with the putter this season. He's been absolutely killed by it. But, you know, we're talking about a golf course, Jeff, that Corey Connors has won two of the last 4-1. So I'm okay with having a guy that sort of flips the script and has a ceiling putting week. And I think that that man could be Tom Kim this week. He's one of the bets on my card.
He's still just 21, and maybe it was that he needed the WD and to take some time. I remember after he won those first two events, you talked about him saying he's trying to figure out his schedule for last year. And he said, well, I was talking to Sungjae about which events, and we both are like, how can we miss any events? And I know some people were yelling, don't talk to Sungjae about that, because he can just do that. He can just play every event. But, you know, maybe for Tom Kim, it was a little bit of, he had that first season down. It's like the star college basketball player or the star college quarterback who plays that first professional season, needs to learn a lot of the terrain, needs to be reeled back in. Remember, he lives in Texas, so who knows? I think that, again, what we're looking at here, some of the odds that you're getting, these guys like Tom Kim, Akshay, Højgaard, those three players that we both just mentioned, they are going to be top 25, top 15, maybe top 10 players in the world. They're going to play on Ryder Cups and President's Cups teams. They're going to compete for major titles. They're all, I mean, what is Nikolai the oldest at like 23 right now? Yes. If that, I mean, there's still so much more to go with those guys, that they're great examples of guys you're trying to catch right now, because you may not see those odds on some of these players for the next decade.
That's right. How about a long shot? You got a long shot for me? Like, maybe it's been the season of them, Jeff. I don't know if you've been following them. They keep coming at over 100, 200-1. Is there maybe a name or two that you like that's sort of in this bomb range that you think may have a chance?
You know, I think we have to, you always have to look at Cameron Champ, who's at, I'm looking at seeing him at plus 13,000, who you know, everyone can be ready to say what they want, but all of a sudden Cameron Champ seems to have figured things out a little bit over the last few weeks. You're starting to see him peak up a couple leaderboards. He's obviously won 3 times on the PGA Tour. He's that example of high volatility. He's made his last 2 cuts, which I know that might not sound like a lot, but for him, that's big. That's what I'm saying. So all of a sudden, you know, I watched him a lot at the Mexico Open at Vedanta, which is like, if you could script the course for him, and he's basically, I was joking, he finished T24. He was in the top 10 for most of the week. I was joking with someone, he can keep his PGA Tour card as long as this event is on the schedule, because he can top 10 there every year and then just has to make a couple cuts. But now he's making a couple cuts right now, and he was in the wilderness for a long time. I know that I said a few seconds ago, this is not necessarily just a pure bomb and gouge sort of course, but I also think he's a great ball striker when he can find, you know, it's not just that he hits the ball, hits the ball with length. When he's able to strike his irons are legitimate. The putting and the short game is a whole other story. Yeah. But he's just a guy, like you said, if you want to find a long shot down the board, it's hard to find a long shot at a 3-time PGA Tour winner. But here's a guy who's sitting there seeming to peak right now.
Yeah, especially when I say I've got a heavy emphasis on power and distance this week, that may be a way to differentiate yourself. So here's a name that I always love, and it's Adam Svensson, but I'll talk about Svensson another time. I always talk about Svensson. There's a guy. So I was watching, Jeff, and I'm sure you've been catching the NCAA tournament. It is so refreshing when you see something out of the ordinary that looks different than everything else. And I'm talking about DJ Burns. When you see someone like that, you're like, man, he doesn't look like anything else. He doesn't play like anything else. You can't put him in a box. And it's so out of the ordinary that it's captivating. It's compelling. That's what I saw from Alejandro Toste. This guy is just like nothing else, man. The fire that he plays with, he's fist pumping. He's walking off the greens early. He's playing fast. He picked a tee out of the ground on 16 or 17. It looked like it just like spiked it out. I think he's rubbing some people maybe the wrong way. There was a little tiff that John Wood talked about that he got into with Tony Finau where he sort of challenged him. And he's this little short, stocky character. And he's like going at Tony Finau, like one of the biggest guys on tour who has all these PGA Tour wins. He doesn't look like your normal rookie. He doesn't play like your normal rookie. His coach talked about this is a guy that he came from nothing. Like he has nothing to lose out there. Like he's out there competing at a very high level with a fire that we don't typically see. It was nice to see him play well last week. There are numbers out there this week. It looks like as high as 175-1. I enjoy characters. And it's what we talked about earlier with some of the viewership developing characters in the sport of golf that people are compelled by from all different types of audiences, I think is important. You know, you have Scotty who fits a certain mold. He's not going to do anything that's controversial, but he's got his own characteristics that make him very attractive to an audience. But sometimes you need a little bad guy in you out there on the tour. And Toasty Bay sort of is stepping into that role. The storylines that I'm hearing from Fried Egg and some of this other stuff are absolutely incredible of him driving around with old checks in the back of a rental car. The guy's fantastic. Give me more Toasty. And if I've got to bet him 175-1, I'm willing to do that this week, coming off the best week of his career. How do you feel about this kid?
The scouting report on Toasty has been the guy's got all of the talent in the world. Like he is legitimately, I mean, everyone that I talked to said he's going to compete. He's probably going to win on the PGA Tour. He was incredibly successful on the Korn Ferry Tour, went to the University of Florida. You talk about coming from nothing, came from Argentina. You say rubs people the wrong way. Remember, he did get suspended from the Korn Ferry Tour last year. There was some gray into why he got suspended. You talk to people around there. He actually kind of reminds me of Patrick Reed in that guys out there, they'll exchange hello with him. It's not volatile, but he doesn't have a lot of friends out there and he doesn't want a lot of friends out there. He wants to win. He wants you to know that he's coming for him. He wants you to know that he is going to turn golf into this mind game where he is going to try to make you feel like he is intimidating. He also needs to get out of his own way mentally, because that's part of where the suspension came in. And he's such a competitor out there that he has done the scouting report is when it's not going well, it unravels very quickly for him mentally. But if he can figure it out, the guy has the talent in the back. I'm looking at some of the names, like to find him at plus 15,000 right now. You're exactly right. There are names in here. I'm going, these guys aren't going to win, but he could win down there at plus 15,000. I also just want to shout out my guy, Justin Lauer, is down there at plus 20,000. Runner up, I believe, or third place earlier this year at the Mexico Open at Vedanta. I guess he would have come in third out there. I mean, there's a couple of guys out here who you go down the list and you go, okay, well, that person can actually win. You know, Carl Yuan could win. Why is he down at plus 20,000? Some guys have already shown that they can compete at the top. So you do have to look at them down the board.
Yeah, Jeff, it's been amazing talking to you. I'm a big fan of your work. Obviously, follow the Justin Lauer piece that you did. You do a great job of sort of putting players and caddies or whoever it is you speak with on your podcast sort of at ease and sort of getting them to open it up and talk about topics that I find interesting, whether it be stuff that outside of the golf course that I like to touch on, mental health stuff that I think is always important and is helpful to people. Tell the people watching this show where they can find some more of your content and what you've sort of got planned for the next week or so here.
Yeah, I am at Jeff Eisenband, J-E-F-F-E-I-S-E-N-B-A-N-D. Eyes on Golf, E-I-S, like my name, O-N-G-O-L-F is my podcast. And yeah, we started at the really kind of had a soft launch in December. I've gone harder with the launch this year. I've got a lot of my PGA Tour Live friends, a lot of the analysts who have some outstanding stories, you know, to tell. I know you kind of asked me before, you know, what are some of those stories? Like taking a guy like Brendan DeYoung, who's been on Golf Channel a little bit, hosts a podcast with Johnson Wagner right now, having him talk about the President's Cup match that him and Ernie Els had against Phil and Keegan was epic. Just, you know, understanding that he's like everyone in the room wanted to beat those guys. He said Angel Cabrera kept saying, like, I want Phil the whole week. And I think he played him in singles. Finally, like, you know, you can't predict that stuff down at the on the last day. So like that story was incredible. You mentioned Lauer, who has his own incredible, inspiring story of not having any D1 offers, went to Malone University. You know, you think about where these guys come from, toil the Korn Ferry Tour for and mini tours for 10 years to get to where they are. And then like Amelia Migliaccio, who's playing in her fifth Augusta National women's amateur, and there's only been five of them. Started this week, you know, why has she continued to be an amateur? And I think there's some, you know, stories to tell in golf. I'm not trying to compete with the biggest podcast right now. I'm not trying to compete with your podcast in terms of actually making picks. I'm trying to find some of the stories right now that are a little off the beaten path that people may not be following, and people who have kind of rubbed shoulders with the people that you want to hear stories about.
Yeah, you really do a great job of it. Everyone should go follow that out, Eyes on Golf. Make sure to check that out. Subscribe to him as well, Jeff. It has been an absolute pleasure. I know that I kept you a little long here tonight, but I appreciate you making time. We'll talk soon via Twitter, and best of luck with everything that you're doing, man. Thanks for coming on the show.
No, thank you. Thanks, everyone, for watching, and thanks for making the time for me.
All right, see you soon. All right, gang. Awesome to talk to Jeff. I hope that you all enjoyed that. Best of luck this week. I'm going to do a quick final thoughts segment and get out of here. Just real quick this week, I found myself super grateful and happy this past weekend. I hadn't seen my mom in nearly a year. She was supposed to come Christmas time. A crazy story. She booked a flight down here. She got all the way to Fort Lauderdale, and my wife and I were like really sick, and my mom is not in the best of health sort of long-term. She's had some complications. I was really sick. I knew she was getting in. I'm like, you know what? I don't want to give her something that's going to make her super sick. I lost my taste. I'm like, uh-oh, go take a test. The entire house had COVID. She had to fly back to Ohio, didn't get to see her. She finally made her way down here for Easter this weekend to spend some time with the family. And I was really grateful for that. We went to Mass. I should go more. But I have a great life. I have a great wife. I have awesome, sweet kids. I have parents that are active and involved in my life. I had one of my cousins passed away this weekend. And I didn't have a great, like a super deep relationship with them, but it's one of my first cousins, and he's not a hell of a lot older than me. Had kids, had cancer, unfortunately, fought it for 10 years, and ultimately succumbed to that disease. And it just made me appreciate moments like you were able, and I was able to have this past weekend with family and in good health, with an understanding that life isn't always going to be this easy at all times. I'm able to work a day job that fulfills the financial needs for my family. I'm able to pour my heart and soul into a hobby and a dream that is this podcast and golf content. I'm able to coach my son's lacrosse team. I'm able to have a good and loving relationship with my wife and spend time with her and go through life experiences with someone that I wouldn't rather do it with anyone else in the entire world. I'm extremely grateful for everything that I have. And I wanted to take a moment to also appreciate you guys for supporting the show. The amount of people that did so by buying these t-shirts, which you should probably go to Preferred Lines Golf now and get one of these shirts so you have it in time for Augusta National. I'm overwhelmed with the support. Thank you all. It means the absolute world to me. Next week, I'm going to be live in Vegas for the Masters doing content over on the Mayo Media Network alongside two of my good friends and people that I really respect in the space, and Jeff Feinberg and Pat Mayo. I cannot wait for that. This has been the Preferred Lines podcast. Best of luck. Full card will be out tomorrow. I hope that you hit a winner at Valero Texas Open. Talk to you guys soon. I'm out of here. Good luck. Peace.